Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, sir.
What's up, man? How you doing? We on the air.
Good, bro.
Brothers for real are on the air. We are in the house. Hey out there, everybody. These are that Munya. Joseph. Hey, Joseph.
Hello, Leon. How are you doing today, my brother?
I'm good, man. Let me do my intro here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brothers for Real radio show. Tonight, we're fortunate again to have Ms. Danielle Brown because we're discussing politics and chicken sandwiches. What's that noise?
Mm-hmm.
What's that noise? Politics and chicken sandwiches. Did I say that right? The sandwiches or sandwiches? Anyway, we need to get another word for it because people are cutting up over chicken sandwiches. Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to the Brothers for Real radio show. We're here every Wednesday, or we try to be. Either we're here or our commercial is here or our rerun is here every Wednesday from 7 to 8. We would like to I'm going to say this again, Robert, Joseph. We enjoy talking to ourselves. We just love to talk to ourselves. But every now and then, we would like for somebody to call in and talk to us. Amen. That's right. And the number to call in, people, is 215-383-3872. I know people don't want to call in because they think we're crazy. We'll talk junk to them. But we wouldn't. Would we, Robert? Robert wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we will. We will. they right.
True.
That is true.
They're right. Okay, guys, how y'all doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great.
Hey,
Joseph,
I'm
you in Charlotte, North Carolina.
You in Charlotte?
What do you say, Robert? No, I'm at home tonight.
I
normally call from the Hollis Center, but I'm at home tonight. I was asking you how things are in Charlotte tonight.
Oh, you're asking me how things in Charlotte?
Yes, I'm going to tell you why I asked before you answer. I watched the ID channel, religiously. That's the investigative discovery channel, for those of you who do not know. And now they have a homicide Charlotte segment going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Why do you do that?
I'm gonna have a lot of killing going on there, bro. They got a whole segment on Homicide Charlotte on the ID channel.
Maybe they got chicken sandwiches up there. I don't know.
Well, I think them chicken sandwich murders up there near Oxon Hill, Maryland, I heard.
Hey, watch it now, watch it. It's close to home here.
That's where the Popeye chicken massacre took place.
Hey.
I'm gonna have to be the monitor here, the moderator.
But
don't be there.
But then what's going on in Charlotte? You know, all of this, new folks coming in Charlotte, and they're kind of pushing pushing the people that's been here for a while to the side, bringing these high prices down. Anytime you create more poverty, you create more violence. That's just the bottom line. And that's just what's going on in Charlotte. And unfortunately, when you start bringing all these NBA teams in and football teams and all this other stuff, see, that stuff soaks up a lot of city resources. And quite frankly, I don't think we get a good enough return on it to have that stuff down here. And also, all these people moving in here from New York and Baltimore and, you know, all over the place. I mean, everybody's flocking to Charlotte right now. And a lot of people come down here with the bad attitudes, and a lot of people come down here, they get caught up in the things. A lot of people come down here, they're thinking Charlotte is soft, you know, because they're from New York or they're from Philadelphia or whatever. They're tough, and they come down here caught, thinking these Charlotte folks is country folks. Just like I told a woman, I said, I'm going to tell you something now. Your boy down come down here. So y'all come down here from New Jersey. You come down here from Chicago, but I'm going to tell you, if you come down here acting up now, your children going to get hurt. That's the message I give them. But there's a whole lot of factors going on behind this stuff that's going on in Charlotte, because we're seeing a return to the 80s. Because, you know, because really right now the murder rate is not up to where it was during the mid-80s. We are getting there, but we are not yet.
And what's that number you give us sometimes on how many people are moving to Charlotte every day? How many new people?
About 60 people a day right now moving to Charlotte. And they bringing everything with them, high prices, crime, this name it. Whatever comes with people, that's what's coming to Charlotte. And like I said, and then you
I imagine you got some good little church folks coming in every now and then, right?
Well, they ain't no better. Church folk, you know.
All right, let's talk about something else. Okay. Hey, Robert.
Hey, man.
I'm not saying that's where it's all coming from. You follow what I'm saying? I'm just saying there are a lot of factors, and that's just one of the factors. You follow me?
Right.
That's not the fact.
Danielle, don't keep going away now. We're coming around to you. Danielle. Hey, Robin and Joe,
right.
We have Danielle Brown on the line. Don't you go anywhere now.
Hey.
We're going to get to you in a minute, okay?
Okay.
And Danielle, we got to get our foolishness out of the way so we can make room for you. We got to get all the foolishness out of the way first.
Can we talk about
foolishness
can we?
By the time we get to you. Yeah, we got to get
all
the systems.
Hey, Robert. Leon. Robert mm-hmm. Leon.
Yeah.
You say you want to get the foolishness out of the way, so why don't we talk about them chicken sandwiches first?
Hey, man, wait, but before we get to that. That is foolishness, but I was listening to you talk, Joe, about the what was happening in Charlotte. But when I look at the economy, it's like you ever see silly putty where you squeeze it and it doesn't really get any bigger or smaller; it just relocates the content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's
right.
What happens. That's what happens to wealth. With the country not getting any wealthier, it's just being squeezed up to the top. And if
exactly
you want to find
right.
the source of violence, if you want to find the violence. Just follow the squeeze. Wherever the squeeze
that's
is taking
right.
place, that's where the violence is going to take place. It doesn't matter whether it was the prohibition during the 1920s, doesn't matter whether the economic boom or the 80s and 90s, whatever the squeeze, that's when violence takes place. And that's and sometimes it's low level, sometimes it's high level, sometimes it's up into the, like I said, the mobsters and gangsters that's moving around billions of dollars. But money does not necessarily get more of it. It just gets squeezed from one place to another. Find the squeezing point, and you're going to find the violence because you're seeing money exchange hands in large numbers, and that's where violence occurs. And right now we're seeing
right.
it at the low level where people are being dislocated.
That's right. And seeing you said it very well, Robert. And basically, that's one of the factors that I was talking about. You made it very plain.
Yeah, got to make it so people can see it. But we're talking about this. I'll tell you what's happening. And first of all, I want to say I'm still recuperating from a wonderful weekend down in Carolina for the homecoming. And
clap,
I got back in town. Oh, yeah. Where's my clap? This is not me. This is real people clapping. There you go. That's our live studio audience.
How do you know they were clapping? How did you know they were going to clap?
Joseph blew it for me. Joseph told them to clap. Joseph gave him that applause sign. But it was a great weekend. Great seeing everybody. Great seeing the brothers. We had a great evening from the. I didn't get there until Saturday. I had an event. I had to MC this event that Saturday morning, and so I literally got on the road at 11:15 after I did my MCing around from 9:30 to about 11 o'clock, and so I got down there. The sun was still up. Hung out with Leon. Hung out with the brothers, and then Sunday morning I had the pleasure. This young lady came with me. She's Ashley Warren. She's at 107.1 Livingstone's College's, I guess, radio station. And she said, I was one of her idols. Man, my day was made. I've been wearing that badge of honor around forever. The fact that she is way down in North Carolina and she listens to the Marketing Pulpit radio show, she says on a regular, she was actually quoting some of the statements I've made on the air. So that's the kind of thing. I'm like, we don't have to pass the torch, but we can actually light somebody else's torch. And I'm proud of that. It means that we, the brothers, Marketing Pulpit, we are making an impact. People are actually listening. And so that was one of the highlights of the day, of the weekend, besides seeing the brother saw mom, glad to see her. You know, she's having some of her challenges, but glad to see that she's being surrounded by love. My sister Ellen is just doing a phenomenal job of taking care of mom. So I'm just, even though this is not foolish, I wanted to get it out because it was in me. I just had to, it was feeling, it was a very fulfilling weekend, and I'm still reaping the benefits of all of that love and camaraderie of hanging with the brothers. Then I get back, before I can get back to town good, somebody goes into Popeyes in Ocklin Hill, which is where my office, I have an office in Ocklin Hill. I have one in Largo Park Center. And one in National Harbor, which is really Ocklin Hill right now. National Harbor, by the way, for anybody who's outside the area, National Harbor is actually a carved out area of Ocklin Hill. And I'm going to tell you why they chose to rename it National Harbor, really for obvious reasons. Ocklin Hill has had some PR challenges over the years. And this latest incident did not help it one bit. We had a slaying where it happened in a Popeye's restaurant right off Livingston Road, which is really about probably less than a mile from my office in Ocklin Hill or National Harbor. And it was stemmed from a chicken sandwich. Now, people say somebody killed somebody over a chicken sandwich. Now, that's a good sound bite, but, you know, it's a little more involved than that. They weren't like, you know, you get this image of people that are tugging over a sandwich and then one reaches out and stabs the other. I understand it was actually a cutting in line incident. And the young guy that was doing the cutting was attacked by the one who was, I guess, in line, who didn't want to see it. Now, that's the police version. The police actually made that statement in a press conference. So some people are saying, where do you get that information from? Some saying it was stemmed from something else. Maybe the person knew the lady behind the counter and he was going to talk to her. I've heard all these different stories. I'm just going to go with this police version until I hear otherwise, that the police made a press release, and they said it stemmed from the young man cutting from the back of the line. They say he moved up the line methodically, took about 15 minutes to get from the back of the line to the cashier. And then from that point, it took 15 seconds for it to escalate from the cashier to the parking lot where he was actually fatally stabbed. So 15 seconds lapsed from the time he got to the front of the line to the parking lot where he was stabbed between two cars, and the perpetrator fled the scene. Now, of course, we like to simplify things and say it was about, hey, are we still being foolish, or do I need to, you want me to go and continue telling this
story?
No,
keep going, man. Keep going, man.
Okay.
Yeah. I need to know all about this. Keep going.
Yeah, so we like to, we get into the sound bites, we get into what media can do to things, to simplify things. But even beyond that, people don't really stab people over chicken sandwiches per se. They stab people over self-hate, they stab people over disses, they stab people over identity crisis, and all of these factors where it works. I think the biggest one is, you notice we don't see people stabbing people of other races over chicken sandwiches and stepping on people's shoes, or this happens every day. Every day somebody's shoes get stepped on regardless of the race. But it seems to only escalate to violence and death when it's somebody of this of in our own community. Now, of course, people assault each other in every community, whether Hispanic assault Hispanics, whites assault whites. So people tend to assault the people that they're in their close proximity to. But that does not excuse or does not mitigate the fact that there is some self-hatred that seems to perpetuate itself in our community. We could, if you look in the mirror, you hate what you see, then you see people that look like you, you're going to hate them too. And you'd be much, much more likely to assault them, to belittle them, to disrespect them. And so we have an identity problem. We have a self-hate problem. And I hate to keep playing the violin about the things that were heaped upon us during the age, during slavery and Jim Crow, and even now with police shootings and some of the other challenges that we're facing. But these are some problems that are unique to our community that we need to address them in unique and more creative ways. And this was a tragedy. It's bad enough that this chicken sandwich is going to kill you anyway because of all the cholesterol and salt and sodium and other unhealthy ingredients in it. But now you got to worry about the chicken sandwich killing you and the person in the line behind you killing you. So I hate to say that serving up death at Popeye's, but that seemed to be an emblematic problem with the self-hate and what's actually going on at Popeye's. So that's my take on what happened at the Popeye's. That's the Popeye's story the way
I see
it. Yeah, but
all that said, Robert, I think they need to take the chicken sandwich off the menu.
Hey, have you had one?
No, I went to get one. It's so loud. No, I went to get one. It's so loud.
The line was too long. Right?
Actually, I've only had the Popeye's chicken that just moved here, and there's one on North Shrine Street, probably about maybe a mile and a half from my office. Mm-hmm. But I've only been there once. They've probably been here 5 years, and I've been there once. And so I've never been so inclined to just go out looking for a chicken sandwich.
But you know what, Joe?
I'm just trying to think of the mentality of people that, I mean, what is it? I mean, I just can't wrap my head, my mind, or anything around what would be so enticing about a chicken sandwich by anyone that would make people go to such extremes to get one.
Joe, let me break this down to you.
You said
let me break
so
this down to you from a let me break this down to my marketing perspective. I've said this in several of my workshops and seminars. There's three things that you can sell anything. I call it the loaded gun, and this would be, it's almost like no pun intended. You have a scarcity and social proof. You put those two items together, you can sell anything under the sun. It's really a lethal mix. And the other one would be security or safety and fear. But let's take the two here. We're talking about social proof. That's the desire to belong or the fear of missing out, or because everybody else is doing it, I'm doing it too. And then you add the scarcity factor, which means there's not enough to go around. You put those two things together, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, anybody under the sound of my voice, you can sell anything under the sun with that combination. Marketers know that. The chicken sandwich is just the latest of a craze, of a series of crazes. We've had Cabbage Patch Dolls. We've had people shooting each other over Nike's Jordan's latest sneakers. So it's not the sneaker. It's not the chicken sandwich itself. It's the latest in a long list of social proof, or we call it Keeping Up the Jones, or Lemons Off a Cliff, Desire to Belong. It has quite a few aliases. But the same concept, and marketers know this. They start creating this vacuum, the whole process. They start working on social proof, the scarcity, and they also use fear as one of that three-legged table of you can sell anything to anybody. Donald Trump is a master of it. He knows it. He's read the book, Social Proof, Scarcity, and Fear. Put the three together, you can sell anything under the sun. And people like to kill themselves, kill other people, once you get wrapped up in that frenzy. So what you're seeing at Popeye's Chicken is nothing new. It just has a different facade. It's a different countenance, but it's the same countenance that was it's the same concept that caused people in this same area, right down the street in Oxon Hill a few years ago, people were fighting and almost killing each other over the release of Michael Jordan's new tennis shoe. This was not chicken. This was tennis shoes. And next month, it's going to be something else. We, as people, have to combat this. It's part of the reason I wrote a book called Played in Full, The Marketing Exploitation of Black America. That is the foundation of my book that I wrote in 2008. And I keep seeing it play itself out over and over again. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Man, Joe, hey, Robert, get yourself a hand there, man. We're going to
okay.
Danielle, we're going to take a quick break.
That's not me. That's the audience.
Robert?
That's the audience.
Got to go, bro. Oh, that's the audience. That's right. That's right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you know, we have municipal elections all across the place. And in some areas, there are things other than the municipal elections, but here in Anson County, we had our local municipal elections. And Ms. Danielle Brown is on the line, and she has been very instrumental in helping us get the word out, get people out to vote, and things of that nature. We're going to just kind of get an update from her when we get back. Robert, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Danielle, take your breath. Take a deep breath. All right. Here we come back. The brothers are back with the sister. The brothers and the sister are back. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brothers for Real radio show. The number to call in is 215-383-3872. Last week we were fortunate enough to have Mr. Brandon Smith to call in and discuss some things with us. And he actually was elected last night as the one of the town council, well, the highest vote getter of the town council in Morgan, North Carolina, where the Hollis Center is. We also elected a new mayor in Morgan last night, Tim Watkins, and another town council member. I can't remember that young lady's name. But anyway, we did have three new electors elected last night in Morgan, as well as across the county. Maybe Danielle can fill us in on the rest of the stuff. But Danielle Brown, welcome to the show again. God bless you. We love you for being here. How are you doing tonight?
I'm wonderful. How are you on?
You're doing great.
Thank you.
You sound just a little bit muffled. I don't know.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's just, what do you think, Robert?
Yep, sounds better. Yep.
There you go, Danielle. How you doing tonight?
I'm great.
Much better.
First of all, I want to thank you again for being in our community, being in the 9th Congressional District, running up and down the street like a chicken with the head cut off. We really appreciate you doing that, being there. You make us tired looking at you move around, but we do appreciate it.
I love what I do, so that makes it even better. I'm paying for it today.
Literally,
though.
You
I'm
love
definitely
me.
Paying for it.
I know that's right. Golly. So how did we do? How did how was the turnout?
Well, I will say this. For Anson County not to have had a primary election in a local election, not to have, you know, any type of early voting, you guys did pretty well. I'm as far as turnout goes, because there was no absentee. So it wasn't like that was offered. There was no early voting like the other counties. So, you know, so for one day, you guys did a pretty good job. I don't think I really could have, okay. To be honest, you know, we can always ask for better, but for one day, election, Anson County did pretty well.
Wow. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that because, you have been in and out of this county, a lot. And, I'm glad to know people appreciate what you're doing by coming out to vote. So, we're really excited about that. Now, let me ask you this, as far as the election goes, I think I read where you thought you were pretty excited about some of the results, and you just elaborate on that, the comments you made on Facebook a little bit for me.
I've been working with quite a few counties over the last couple of months, Anson County being one of my main ones, but I was very excited to see different wins to come out, you know, as nonpartisan, basically to see the excitement, the changes, things of that sort. That was really, really exciting. However, across the board, not just looking at one particular county, across the board, we cannot be satisfied with the status quo. We can't be satisfied with mere wins. Some of these wins, they literally won by like one or two votes. You know, it wasn't like a significant amount. We need to have landslides, especially in these local elections. So we need to demand a little bit more. From us as a people. We need to demand a little bit more from our counties, because there's no reason that Anson County should not have had early voting. You know, it's no reason you guys should not have had absentee ballots. Those are just things that we've got to demand a little bit more. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is to educate people, let them know about these public meetings that they can go to and voice their opinions and have a say in, be a part of the process. And then the other thing that I was kind of on a rant about this morning was people taking credit for other people's work. You know, we have a lot of people that go out here and when they run on these local elections, a lot of them, they run off of their own merit, their own money. They do all of it. They don't have people that support them. So you have a lot of people that come back once somebody has run and they win. Oh, you know, they act like they've been there the entire time, especially ones who you've asked for help and they didn't come to the rescue, but they feel like, you know, they've done something. No, the fact of the matter is we need to be more supportive of each other. We need to really, really look at this thing and be like, okay, you know, how can I support my brother? How can I support my sister? You know, if I'm going to church with this person and they're telling me they're running for office, you know, what can I do to help support you? Can I take somebody to the polls? Can I make some phone calls, knock on some doors? We need to be more supportive of each other and not looking at so much of fighting each other, you know, about certain situations, because we're all, regardless, we all live in, when it's all said and done, we all still got to live in the same neighborhood together, go to the same churches together, you know, shop at the same stores. We've got to be more, we've got to come together a lot more instead of being so separate.
Right. Well, like I said, we just appreciate what you do. And we're going to keep trying to make sure we get more people out to vote. I know we had some people, just like we had some highs, we had some lows, we had some people that were really looking forward to getting elected and didn't. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I always try, my advice to people in these small towns, is go pig people up and take them to vote. And you know, like you say, that sometimes the highest vote get is only 70 or 50 or 60 or something like that. Heck, you can go pick that up, that mean up yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you want
and,
it.
And, you know, exactly, if you want it. And the other thing, too, is, you know, I look at it, too, especially here locally, in local elections. Win or lose, you've won because your name is out there. So my thing of it is, even if you've lost, what are you going to do with that loss? Are you going to go still? Are you not going to go to the town meetings? Are you not going to participate just because you lost? No, that's the time where you need to be participating because you actually have a say. People know you. People know who you are. They're looking at the platform that you ran off of. So what exactly are you, even in a loss, what are you going to do?
Yeah, but I understand what you're saying, but you lost.
Yeah, a loss is a loss. Like, L is L. Hey, I'm not negating that in any way, shape, or form. But at the same time, you know, people look at that. You know, that's
right.
Something that people really – that's something that people look at, especially when you are there. I've had – I've ran into a lot of different candidates that said, you know, hey, win or lose, we still want to know about your organization. Win or lose, we still want to do this. We want, well, you know what? This is the time where we're going to see where that really, really happens. Because you know me and you know me well enough to know that I will hold you to that.
You're right. So,
hey,
guys, Robert.
Hey, Danielle. Yeah, I had a question for Danielle.
Sure.
Hey, Danielle, how you doing?
I'm good.
You said earlier that whether you win or lose. Now, you're saying, now this is the marketing side of me always. I have this marketing field that always alarm goes off when people start talking marketing terminology. But are you saying that when somebody decides to run, that maybe the actual fact of running is helping their brand and attracting those stakeholders that they need down the road, whether they win or lose? Because I heard Leon say, hey, man, a loss is a loss. And I agree with that, too. You really want to win.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying, from my understanding, that by actually putting your name out there, that has some benefit as well.
Correct. It does.
What would some of those benefits be, in your opinion? Yes, sir.
So I've seen it where people have lost, but at the same time, the people that actually voted for them, that were actually, you know, setting, that were behind them, still wanted something done locally. They still wanted something pushed among the city council or commission or county commission or something like that. And that particular person was the one who took it to the floor and was able to get it done. They were the ones who knew the terminology, knew what needed to happen, knew the process to be able to get it done. And on top of that, their constituents actually listen to them a little bit more because they know for a fact, you know what, this person could take my seat next time.
And that person has demonstrated the ability to galvanize the populace and move people. And that has some value. That has some tangible value, if whether they decide to run again next time or to leverage that juice into something else, another office, an organization, a business, a job. So I agree that when you put yourself out there, of course, there's always the built-in disadvantages of making yourself a target. But I think the benefits outweigh the minuses. You know, if your nose is clean and you're doing good things for the community, I think it's always better to look at, if you're doing good things, to go ahead and get your name out there and start building your brand. So the next time you run, first of all, second thing is, you're not a stranger to people. They already know your platform. They know about you. They know you're a straight shooter. So keep building that profile until you finally get that brass ring you're shooting for.
Correct.
I was just listening to what she was saying about, you know, when you run, you get your name out there. Years ago, and you all probably never even knew about this, but I was actually thinking about running for governor of North Carolina, and I was talking to some friends. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Because,
go ahead,
you know,
Dad.
Everybody out there. Pardon me?
I mean, go ahead, boy.
But anyway, this African guy, He told me he was called. He and I, we used to talk just about every day. And he said you should do it. He said you should do it. Cause look at it this way, Mr. Gatewood. Even if you lose, look how much name recognition you would have out there, and look what it would do for your business.
Yeah.
He said your business would.
I tell you
off.
Something. Else. You know, huh? You know, Joe.
Yeah.
Very few people realize this, but that's exactly what Donald Trump did. This guy did not plan to be president. That was not his plan.
Yeah, no. Exactly right. He did not plan to be the president. But
he did exactly what your African guy said. He did exactly what the African guy said. Donald Trump did exactly what the African friend. Mm-hmm.
He told me that 15 years ago. He said you should do it. He said, because if you do it, even if you lose, look at what it would do to your business. Your name would be recognized all over the state.
You sound just like him, though.
I sound just like him. But let me ask you, I have a question for you, Gatewoods. Why haven't any of you all ever run for public office?
Can I go first? May I go first?
Yes.
Yes.
May I go first?
Yes, you may go first, Leon.
Stop asking and go ahead.
Because I'm not that kind of brother. You know what I mean? I don't like... I don't like asking people for stuff, and you have to ask all these people to vote for you. I hate rejection. I'm just telling you why it is. I don't like meetings. I could go on.
You have to raise money. You have to raise money too.
Next.
You have to raise money.
Yeah, you have to raise. That's what I'm saying. You have to ask people for money, and I'll tell you this. I once served on the Anson County School Board. I served on the school board because Miss Dale was in her when she was sick. She asked me to take her seat. If I would take her seat once she left the seat. And I said yes. And I served a few months. I served her term out. Then when it came time to run again, this is it. I'm done. I'm just not that kind of brother.
What about you, Robert?
Well, Joe, I have a symbiotic relationship with politics. I was...
What does that mean, man? Wait.
I've been
break that down, bro. Break that down.
Well, it means that we have a kind of a love-hate relationship. It's like I'm not necessarily for it. I'm not necessarily against it. I look at the pros, the cons. Now, this is something you ought to be the first one to hear this. But I actually started doing an exploratory after this past election. I look for a position where I can almost win without having to go out here doing everything you just described, Leon, which I loathe as well. There's in the state of Maryland, in my area, there's like five or six commissioners that sit on this. It's a paid. I mean, it's a public. It's a elected office, but you choose six people out of this off the ballot, and the top six that get the most votes. They're part of a commission. I don't forget what the darn commission does. But I was doing my investigation and research. I think that's what I'm going to run for right there. Because if you have those ballots, nobody knows anybody on it. They'll check the first two or three. And I don't know who that is. I'm going to just check. I'm hoping I'm voting for the right one.
Right.
One could be a Klan. The other could be a terrorist. One could be who knows what. They just checking boxes.
I'm going to be in the black.
So I think if I get on one of those lists. I think I get on one of those lists. The luck of the draw might get me. But that was the first. That was the first thing I was going to know. The second thing was, I've been so averse to hypocrisy. I've always felt that anybody who desires to be a politician is automatically disqualified for the job, because I felt that politicians, by their sheer nature, sometimes they're and there are a few exceptions, and the ones that that don't fit this mold, I have mad love for them. I mean, I think they are, far as I'm concerned, they are gods and goddesses. If you are not your typical politician, and you're able to galvanize people and let them see the way without selling out your soul, then my goodness, they deserve every vote and every benefit that goes with the job. So I've kind of, that's why I have this symbiotic relationship with it. I'm kind of torn. I'm not sure if it's something I want to do, but I feel like if I do, I would be that different type of politician. And if I can do that and win, then that's where I'm having that challenge. Can I do that and still win? That's why I'm looking at this commission spot. Where I'm going to get in not by begging for votes and money, but I'm going to get in through the luck of the draw. Anyway, that's my take on it. What about you, Joe? Why you haven't done it, even after the guy told you to do it?
Darn, I shouldn't have brought that question up.
In the
but anyway.
Why you did not rank for the position even after the guy had told you to do it?
Right.
Exactly.
I'm kind of like you, Robert. I've always had this philosophy. Anybody who is smart enough to be a politician is too smart to be one. And anybody that's honest enough to be a politician is too honest to be one. And of course, and from my perspective, to me, you have to have a big ego, you know, to do that. And I have just never been that egotistic. Now, if it's like I told my wife this. I said, now, if a group came together and said, Joseph, we want you to run for county commission, city council, mayor, whatever the case may be, and they would get solidly behind me and just get out there and just push me, do it, just because they feel like I am the guy that can do the job, I would probably do it. But just for me to come out and say, Joseph, you're the smartest guy for this job. Joseph, you're the most, you know, dedicated guy for this job, the most knowledgeable guy for this job. My ego is just not that large.
Joseph.
Yes.
I think I would do it for that in that regard.
Yeah, what I'm saying, most of us.
If somebody would do it for me.
We're brothers. We just don't have that ego that's necessary for that. We just don't have the ego.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm scared of Danielle now. Danielle, have you ever considered running for public office?
No.
Hey, Danielle, Danielle sounds like a politician, though. I think she'd be great.
I thought she was a mayor.
You saying all that, man? No, you didn't think that with her on the line the way you just talking about politics.
I thought she was.
No, I thought she was one of the ones
Robert was talking about, you know, the good ones, you know, to get in, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's it.
I thought she had just won a legislative seat or something last night. That's what I thought. No, okay.
Thanks for cleaning it up for me, Joe, because I stepped in it there for a minute. Yeah, I thought she was one of those good ones. She has a political, the way she articulates her issues and
her
positions.
Articulate.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's one of the requirements. Election. Yeah, me too. I had my check. I had my pencil out.
Yeah, you can get three votes right here.
You got three right here.
I was ready to go. I didn't know she wasn't.
You can get three votes right here tonight.
Oh, well, thank you.
Go, Danielle. Go, Danielle. Danielle for president.
Go, Danielle. So, Danielle.
Yes.
Rest.
What do you say?
What drives you? I mean, I know the car, but I'm saying what keeps you going like that? What? y'all just don't know her, man. Y'all don't know.
Yeah, a lot of personality.
A lot of what?
She seems She has a lot of personality, and plus she's very jovial. She's a happy person,
jovial,
so I guess that was
energetic.
Energetic.
I call her
about that in a
yeah.
I hire a right to do
I call her a happy laughy lady. That's what I refer to her as. A happy laughy lady.
She got the cute little laugh.
Thank you. No, what keeps me going is the ultimate goal and the ultimate outcome. You know, like we've discussed numerous times. When we first met, you asked me what my goal was for Anson County, and I said all 14,000 people registered to vote. Since then, we've moved it up to actually getting them to the polls and mobilizing them to vote. But, you know, but that's, you know, the ultimate goal. I mean, because people need to understand that that's their voice. That is, and nobody else speaks for you. Nobody else can. Nobody else can go in there and say, hey, I'm, you know, Leon Gatewood and, you know, I want to vote. You know, they can't do that. This is the one and only voice that you definitely can go in and say it's mine and I can utilize it and be a part of a process that actually impacts everybody, not just yourself, but it impacts everybody. So that's what drives me, you know, seeing the outcome, seeing how it has played out, looking at all these people going to the polls, looking at people that have never voted before, and seeing their faces and when they come out with their sticker and how happy they are. That sticker goes a long way. Seeing people that, you know, have had felony charges that their rights are restored and they get to go exercise their vote, you know, for the, you know, first time, and things like that are moving. Talking to someone who won an election. Yeah.
Quick question. What's the process for getting your rights restored?
You have to completely finish all of your probation, whatever fines and fees or whatever that had to be paid, all that stuff has to be taken care of. And basically from there, once you finish all of that, you can go and register to vote and get your rights restored.
Another quick question. What's your answer to people who say, my vote doesn't count, I'm not voting? There's some people, there's some hard noses out here. They say, they
oh,
will
yeah.
tell you, I've heard something in the last couple of days say, I'm not voting. It don't matter. It ain't going to matter no way. Whoever get elected, blah, 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 blah.
Do
you punch him in the stomach
pocket.
Or do you just kind of?
No. Because I actually want you to, you know, be, you know, I don't want you to be handicapped going to vote. But, My answer is always I take it to them and what affects them. You know, there may be somebody that, you know, do you live within city limits? Yes. Okay. Do you pay a water bill? Yes. How much is your water bill? You know, or somebody that, you know, says, you know, my vote doesn't count or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. Well, you know, the last time you went to the store and you paid taxes on something that you purchased, how much were your taxes? You know, a lot of times when you hit people, you got to meet them where they are. You know, you got to actually figure out. And then sometimes you have to ask beyond those questions when they start saying things like that. You have to be the one to say, okay, why do you feel that your vote doesn't count? What happened? You know, tell me, you know, ask the hard questions, you know, have a conversation. And even then some people still are not going to do it. But guess what? Every time I see you, I'm going to ask you something. I'm going to engage you, have that conversation. 365, it is not a November 5th conversation. It is 365 days. Again, I say all the time, we are unfortunately, we are very complacent people. And if we don't see something every single day, we easily forget about it. If we don't, you know, talk about it every single day, we easily forget about it. But having those hard conversations, talking about it every single day, not being afraid to ask the hard questions and get to the bottom of the real reason people feel the way that they feel, and not literally not try to change people, because you don't want to go in trying to change them. You want them to vote, yes, but you don't want to go in trying to wave your finger at them and make them do this and make them do that. That's not going to work. And we know that. So it's having that conversation. That's the biggest thing.
True. Robert.
Hey, man. You know
we
what, man?
We're going to take another break, man. And, yeah, man.
I was looking at in Kentucky, Kellyanne Conway sent out a tweet that she was congratulating this black guy. He's a black Republican for winning the attorney general slot. So even though the actual some guy named Daniel Cameron, so he won the attorney general slot, even though the state the key prize of governorship went to this guy Beshear in the state of Kentucky, which was, you know, it's Mitch McConnell's state. And so even though the guy that lost hasn't conceded yet. But, you know, I'm still having a problem with some of these blacks who wear the Republican R. And, of course, they're going to sit there and say that, you know, they're the party that freed the slaves. And then they'll sit there and say point out what is it that the Democrats are doing so great and why this blind allegiance. But, see, I keep hearkening back to the Southern strategy that was put out there by Lee Atwater. That's why many people struggle when they ask them, well, what is it that the Republicans are doing so badly that caused black people to have this blind allegiance to the Democratic Party? Well, that's part of the strategy as well. It's a mind game. It's an old shell game. I mean, besides the obvious of associating with right-wing extremists and hate groups that pledge allegiance to the Republican Party, that alone should be a disqualifier for many people who are black trying to find a place, a home, to pledge their allegiance. But there are these subtle things that they support that disproportionately affect blacks. That's where it gets gray and why many people have a hard time voice articulating their argument. Things like voter suppression. Now, voter suppression affects everybody, but it disproportionately affects blacks. Things like tax breaks. We're not in the 1%. So once again, even though it wasn't targeted against blacks, it was targeted to help the 1%, in which we are basically absent. Things on assaults on public education. Once again, they're not targeting blacks per se, but blacks are disproportionately represented in public education. Things like health care. Many blacks, they've been trying so hard to dismantle Obamacare. Once again, it's not a black program, but it disproportionately helps blacks who had fallen between the safety nets when it comes to health care. Things like minimum wage, once again. Many people, including the Democratic Party, have been trying to push forward a minimum wage of $15 per hour. Who's the biggest fighter? Who's fighting it the hardest? The Republican Party. And then we have things like privatization. Privatization is evil. Privatization, what that does, it takes money from your taxes and gives it to private companies who would turn around and make a profit and funnel that money up to the 1%, which once again disproportionately affects blacks. So don't let people get it twisted and confused when they say, oh, yeah, this affects everybody. Look at that word disproportionate. Many of these programs that's pushed by the Republican Party goes back to Lee Atwater's strategy when he was saying, of course it's going to hurt whites, but it's going to hurt blacks more. That's the problem I have with people who are supporting this sometimes evil policies of the Republican Party.
Well, Danny, I can't say anything about that. She's nonpartisan.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm not in love with the Democratic Party either, but I think that's some evil people in that Republican Party. There's some.
Well,
why would you?
One thing you have,
why? Go ahead, Joe.
No, I'm just going to say, you know, if you want to know when blacks got a, I mean, people can say what they want to about the black electorate, but when it comes to the black electorate, they are more politically astute than our white counterparts. And the reason I say that is because I think black people, they have done a better job voting their interests than white people. Because I think if
that's
white
exactly
people
right
voted their interests as well as black people vote their interests, I think there probably wouldn't be any white poor white people. Because what you have to look at
you
is when did, huh?
No, I was going to go ahead, Joe. I was just going to say technically.
I was just going to say, because you have to go back and, like I said, black people, for the most part, they're pretty politically astute. Because what you have to go back and look at is when did black people abandon the Republican Party? Well, they abandoned the Republican Party in 1948. I mean, excuse me, they abandoned the Republican Party in 1948 because in 1948, that's when Harry Truman, first of all, he's desegregated the military, and in the 1948 election, they put civil rights on the platform of the Democratic Party. And when that happened, you know, guys like Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms, because keep in mind, all these guys were Democrats, and of course, George Wallace was too. But the two I'm talking about right now is Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond. That's when they left the Democratic Party, and they ran a candidate, Strom Thurmond, on the party they called the Dixiecrats. And of course, the Dixiecrat Party kind of fizzled out, and they really didn't do anything. And so all these guys that had abandoned the Democrats, they were looking for some place to go, and where they went to was the Republican Party. They went to the Republican Party, and they really changed the Republican Party to what it is to this day.
And it's become more and more extreme.
You mean Jesse Helms just
being
a Democrat?
Pardon
me?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was actually most of these guys Strom Thurmond, all these guys were Democrats. They became, like I said, during when Lyndon Johnson was pushing through that Civil Rights Act, that was the final nail in the coffin. Anybody that had hung around before then, they really jumped ship then. They said, look, we will not be part of a party that's doing this to help blacks. So I don't think black people
because
are,
the thing about it,
necessarily.
Democrats, of course, you know, the Democrats, because just like you keep for example, just like Roosevelt, for example, you know, the New Deal program. See, all that stuff came about to help poor white people that were suffering. And black people benefited from it just by default. Because you keep in mind the Republicans, well, they have always been about the money, about the rich. And of course, and one of my takes is that's the whole reason the Civil War was fought was to get that inexpensive labor out of the South and get it up to the North. And so once, you know, black people, you know, got out of slavery, you know, for the most part, and they started moving to the North, the Republican Party really didn't have any more use for us, really. And of course, and that's why the racist whites that were in the Democratic Party, they found safe haven in the Republican Party.
Well, Joe, you've made some very good points, and it kind of supports what I was saying. It's not necessarily about a loyalty or fidelity of fiefdom, party fiefdom, or anything like that. Is that if your interests, where are your interests? Where do your interests lie? And if your interests lie, if you are a, now what I'd like to encourage everybody, regardless of your race or persuasion, you should get out of that group that's going to be negatively affected by these policies that punish the poor. We need to leave the ranks of the poor and move into the middle class and above. And that should be an underlying goal at all times. But there are so many things that keep, and that's also part of the strategy to make sure you're not able to leave that category. And that's where it gets really detrimental to blacks and why I have, if I were to, I've never considered myself like a loyal Democrat, but I've always I've had a very keen eye to policies that punish the majority of blacks. And
that's right.
So sometimes you kind of pushed in there by sheer not because of your will or your desire, just by the sheer almost your detestation of what's happening when you have a party that has been infiltrated now by racist and white supremacists, and they almost been the red carpet is being rolled out to them, I have a hard time supporting that party.
That's exactly right.
It's just plain and simple.
Right.
It's called survival. It's survival instinct.
And that's why, I say, you know, and see, in black people have pretty much been able to identify that. You follow me? You know, you were talking about, you know, Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, we're not dumb at all. Just like Jesse Jackson said years ago, just because people are poor, that don't mean they're dumb. You know, just because, you know, Republicans like to always say, well, we're the Republican Party, that's who freed the slaves. Yeah, that's good, but what have you done since then? I mean, what have you done lately? That's what we have to look at. You know, we're glad that happened. But now we got to think about what's going on in this present day. We can't live in the past. We got to move on.
Well,
Leon, you
open lately, brother. We're going to have to take it
out. You open up that can of political worm, boy, and that's what you get.
I did, and in front of these two political science majors, and you guys have gone at it. Just shut me and Danielle out the conversation. Brothers, our time is up. We're going to get up out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We'll be back next Wednesday with some more good stuff. Danielle, God bless you. Thank you for doing what you do. We're going to be keeping our eyes on you running up and down the road. We're going to be praying for you.
Take care, Danielle. Nice meeting you.
And run for something, Danielle. Danielle, run for something. Run for something.
Okay.
She's running every day, brother. She's running for something every day, all day. God bless you, brothers.
All right, Leon. Thank
you, brother. Have a good night.
Talk to you soon. For man old.
Robert, I'm out of here, brother.
You got to love the one you with. You got to love the one you with.
Be careful getting out the road. Get down the road, brother.
Don't be angry.
Head up.
All right, thanks.
Don't sit sad. Don't sit crying. Talking about the good times. Well, there's a girl sitting right next to you. And she's just waiting for something to do.
You got to love the one you with. You got to love the one you with. I love.